we're going to go on to 092960, Prakashnayak versus Beringer Ingelheim. And it's going to be Mr. Lehman. Good morning, Mr. Lehman.
May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Matthew Lehman, and I represent the plaintiff in this matter, Prakash Naik. This appeal arises out of the court's grant of summary judgment to the defendants based upon a claim for violations of the ADEA as well as Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. The issue and our condition here is that the defendant violated fundamental rules of discovery and the law of the case during their presentation of summary judgment. In this matter, we took the deposition of Mr. Naik's direct supervisor, Brett Lunsden. Mr. Lunsden gave certain statements and testimony that he began investigating Mr. Naik for alleged falsification of what they call doctor face-to-face call reports because Mr. Naik was apparently performing much lower than average. Mr. Lunsden testified that, on average, sales reps for Beringer Ingelheim, which Mr. Naik was one, should be averaging approximately 8 or so calls per day, 2 doctors. He testified that a comparable individual in Mr. Naik's sales group who was not in the protected class, one Sean Nordquist, was performing 8 or above average calls per day to these doctors.
Okay, now, suppose we agree with you that Mr. Lunsden's reasons for instituting a more searching review of Mr. Naik's call record are suspect. How does that help you if you cannot disprove that he discovered evidence that Mr. Naik falsified face-to-face contacts with physicians? And how could the average daily call records you sought help in the face of that evidence?
Well, in a couple of ways. I think, A, the defendants have actually shown no evidence that he did, in fact, falsify calls. They've turned over records of his calls that he made on doctors, but there is no evidence that he actually falsified these, and Mr. Naik has at all times denied that. Now, these average call per day reports.
Wait. Let's stay on that.
Sure.
Did Mr. Naik try to speak with anyone in the physician's offices where he was accused?
Mr. Naik has obtained
falsifying face-to-face visits to back up his version?
He obtained affidavits from every one of those doctors saying they'd never spoken to Brett Lunsden and Mr. Lunsden had never contacted their office to the best of their knowledge. Mr. Naik is personal friends with many of these doctors. They said that he was in and out of these offices so much that it was impossible for them to tell whether or not on a specific day he was there.
Well, but he may not have, but the doctors weren't there.
That actually is an issue, I think, of fact for the jury to decide. On several events, these doctors might not have been seeing patients on that day, but based upon Mr. Naik's relationship with these individuals, he was often allowed to see them. Many of these doctors are Indian doctors who Mr. Naik was friends with.
But my understanding was that they weren't even in those offices, like the office in Wonder Lake and the office in Schaumburg, and they weren't even there.
That is the defendant's contention, but that is not what the doctors have stated in this matter. The doctors have stated that it's not necessarily true that they're not at those locations. They may not be seeing patients at that time. Furthermore, Mr. Lunsden admitted that a lot of times these doctors meet with Mr. Naik or meet with sales reps at lunch meetings outside of the office.
Are we just arguing the evidence all over again?
I believe so, Your Honor. I mean, I think that this is the case. There are issues of fact that are going undecided here that were, I believe, decided by the court that should not have been.
I am missing something. I feel like there's a piece of a puzzle missing because it seems to me that Mr. Naik knew from the inception of the investigation the offices where he was believed to have falsified visits. And he was certainly free to contact those offices himself and verify that he did, in fact, visit with those doctors. Did that happen?
He did contact those offices. Unfortunately, the defendants reached back several months into these call reports, and a lot of these doctors said, they don't keep independent records of when a sales rep visits them. All of the records came from Mr. Naik's recording of who and when he saw doctors. Now, the defendant claims to maintain records of when these doctors are in these offices, But these change. These are not something, I mean, what I'm saying here is that they reached back months and months and months to find dates that these doctors weren't necessarily in their office. Now, as far as the average calls per day report goes, we think that this shows evidence of pretext for terminating Mr. Knight. In his deposition, Brett Lunston says Prakash Naik was making 4 calls per day. He said that was low, and that's why he began investigating him further. Now, at summary judgment, he turns around in his affidavit and says Mr. Knight was making higher than average calls per day, but that the corresponding number of prescriptions written by these doctors did not match up with the calls that he was allegedly making. And one thing I want to make clear is that Mr. Knight doesn't sell anything. He goes to these doctors and attempts to convince them to write prescriptions. So there's any number of 1,000 reasons why these prescription sale numbers weren't going up. I mean,
what about the fact, the argument that Mr. Knack has waived his argument that the district court erred by denying his discovery request because he failed to object to Magistrate Nolan's ruling on his motion to compel? And you didn't file a reply brief, so I think I need an explanation for the failure to object to her order.
Absolutely, Your Honor. I think in this case, those documents were deemed irrelevant. As they're deemed irrelevant, the law of the case would suggest that neither party can then sit back and rely on them at summary judgment. Brett Lunston's affidavit at summary judgment relies primarily on these average call per day reports as the basis for much of his information. Now, if they're going to cite those documents, they cannot. They need to be produced to us for inspection. If they're irrelevant, they're irrelevant, and neither party should be allowed to rely upon them. If they don't have those documents, they can't prove that Mr. Knight's, they cannot show any reason for looking.
Well, why didn't you object, or whoever, object to her ruling on the motion to compel?
I think tactically, if neither party can rely on these average calls per day reports, they can't show any good reason for further looking into Mr. Knight's falsification of calls. It became a non-issue. Now, because they cited them in their deposition or in their affidavit of summary judgment, it suddenly presents a major issue for us because we have no way of combating that without actually being able to see these documents. But as they're ruled irrelevant, we don't think that the defendant has any basis for being allowed to cite to them. I admit it's an interesting issue, but
it's an interesting argument, that's for sure. I'm trying
See, I think the difficulty here is with pretext in this case. It looks like they thought he was falsifying these reports. Maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong. They maintain that they're correct, he was falsifying. But even if they're wrong, it seems like it's a pretty questionable claim that they fired him because he was an Indian.
Well, we think
Didn't see much of that.
Well, we think
here, and if they, you know, legitimately believed that he was falsifying these reports,
we
and
actually
took that action, even if it was incorrect to begin with. I don't see, especially when you mentioned that most of the doctors he was calling upon were Indian, that would seem to be in a company's interest to have a sales rep that was selling to
Indian doctors. I agree, Your Honor, and I think that this actually is primarily based on his age more than anything. Mr. Knight,
yeah, but his age, he was 53 when he was hired by the company and by a 31-year-old, and
he was the oldest rep by far within his district. Also, he was replaced by an individual substantially. I think the guy was about 26 years old who replaced him, a 26-year-old white male.
But other than referring to Naik's 30 years of experience, did Lunston actually say anything objectively derogatory about Mr. Naik's age?
Well, he was actually quizzed at one point about his wife's age during a call ride-along. The way that he referenced his 30 years of age was in a more derogatory manner, as in meetings. I can't believe with your 30 years of experience you don't know how to do this. Those comments were repeatedly made at staff meetings with other sales reps. It was the type of thing where Mr. Knight felt he was being called out, so to speak, for his age, as opposed to being it used as something to his credit. And I think further here, much of the district court's ruling on summary judgment relied upon these average calls per day's report. Whether or not Mr. Nike was performing up to standards at the time he was dismissed is based entirely upon his average call per day report. It's not based upon the fact that Mr. Nike was tied for third out of 73 sales reps. It's not based upon the fact that his most previous annual review, he was rated as satisfactory across the board. And it's not based upon the award that he received approximately a month and a half before he was terminated. Basically, what we believe that this looks like is a pretextual reason for terminating Mr. Nike based upon these average calls per day reports, which were not produced to us, the defense repeatedly objected to, and were eventually ruled irrelevant. And anything further? Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Arroyo, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. Robert Arroyo for Behringer Ingelheim Pharmaceuticals Counsel. Judge Evans, you're absolutely correct. This case, I think, boils down to whether or not there is evidence of pretext, and there is no evidence of pretext. The undisputed record evidence is that Behringer, they honestly believed that Mr. Nake falsified face-to-face call reports with physicians. And there is no evidence in this case, nothing submitted, that shows that they did not honestly believe that. They engaged in a reasonable investigation. Call reports that Mr. Nake had submitted were suspect on their face because of late start times, the sync times with the computer, the level of prescriptions from these various doctors didn't measure up to the increased calls that he was reporting. And so they did contact these various offices to confirm whether or not these certain doctors were in the office on the days in question. And the various incidents are listed in pages 8 and 9 of our brief. Just to highlight a couple, Mr. Nake reported that he met with the Dr. Nareg at his Wonder Lake office on January 26, 05 and March 16, 05, both Wednesdays. That doctor worked in his Ingleside office on Wednesday afternoons. One other one, he reported that on Thursday, April 14, 2005, he met with Drs. Guevara Sr. and Jr. At their office. That office only allows a sales rep to visit one doctor a day, and the junior doctor, that was his day off.
I'm going to stop just for a moment because Mr. Nayak maintained that Mr. Lunston testified at his deposition that he launched a more detailed inquiry into Mr. Nayak's sales practices because he was only averaging 4 instead of the ideal of 8 sales calls.
Yes.
Per day. Okay.
I can explain it.
Did Lunston later state in his affidavit that Nayak was actually averaging 6 to 8 calls per day, and that the higher call volume prompted further inquiry?
Judge, in his declaration, Lunston explained that Mr. Nake was recording 6 to 8 calls, that is, individual visits with doctors per day, right? And then he visited more than one doctor in some offices, which is against policy in most offices. In his deposition, he testified that Mr. Nake was recording 4 or 5 addresses a day. 4 or 5 addresses a day and visiting with 6 to 8 physicians a day because he claimed that he was visiting multiple doctors at various addresses. And that so he was explaining his deposition testimony. He did not contradict it.
Why would it be unusual to see more than one doctor in an office? It seems to me it would make a lot of sense.
Well, I think the pharmaceutical companies would agree with you. However, medical offices don't. They believe that it's just too disruptive to have a salesperson in the office jumping around from doctor to doctor. So that's basically the common rule, Your Honor. So if I may get back to the issue of pretext, after conducting this investigation, they didn't just fire Mr. Naik. They did what is a good employment practice. They met with him, and they showed him, gave him this information. And he didn't admit or deny that he failed to meet with those doctors on those days. He said he couldn't remember. Fine. He asked for some time to check his diary and records at home to see if he could explain these events. They said fine. They gave him a day. He calls back. He says, I need more time. Fine. They gave him another day. He then responds, I have nothing further to provide. Again, he neither admitted nor denied that he had engaged in this misconduct. And when they terminated him, he did not dispute the termination. With regard to the affidavits that counsel mentioned, he never produced those. In fact, he didn't obtain them until after his termination. And when he did get them, within, I think, a couple of weeks, you would think that he would supply them to the company and say, here, I have these affidavits. Please reconsider. Please reinstate me. He didn't. The affidavits, by the way, simply say, no, he's a nice guy. He's a good salesperson. But we don't know whether or not we met with him on those particular days. So they're really not very meaningful. In fact, we obtained those in a Freedom of Information Act request to the EEOC just at the time the litigation was filed. So the company certainly cannot be faulted for not considering those affidavits.
Well, you know, I was wondering why you withheld the call per day reports. Were they really that difficult to generate? I mean, you had them.
He had asked for the average call reports, not just for his territory, but for the entire region. And they would have been really not meaningful. The company didn't rely on those documents in terminating Mr. Naik. It was those documents, when they looked at them for Mr. Naik, and another experienced salesperson in the territory, that led them to dig down deeper with Mr. Naik's records, because there was some smoke there, so they wanted to see if there was fire. They didn't see any smoke with regard to any of the other reps. It was, in our view, irrelevant. The company produced over 2,300 documents, pages of documents, in this single plaintiff discrimination case. They provided everything that was relied upon in connection with Mr. Naik's termination.
Except what they wanted,
right,
it would seem.
Well, the Magistrate Nolan agreed with us. It was irrelevant. He had an opportunity, counsel had an opportunity to appeal on behalf of his client. He didn't. So that particular issue was waived. But with regard to the McDonnell Douglas prima facie case, suggesting that there's no pretext, and there is no pretext here. I'm not suggesting that he failed, that he met every element of his prima facie case, because he didn't meet two of the elements of his prima facie case. One is he failed to show that he was meeting the company's legitimate expectations at the time of his termination.
Very questionable about that one, though, it seems to me. Because his failure to meet the expectations coincided with the reason for his being fired.
You could debate that, Your Honor.
And, I don't think that's double counting.
And in the vast majority of employment cases, you have that give and take there on that particular element. But there's also the element of whether or not the company treated a comparable employee more favorably under similar circumstances. And we don't have that here either. In fact, in the two-year period...
Well, I think the cases suggest that you can, in this kind of a case, you can, to satisfy that point, you can introduce evidence of his replacement and the characteristics of his replacement.
Well, two things...
Yes, they did here.
Yeah, you're right, Your Honor. This Court's decisions are perhaps, in my view anyway, a little fuzzy on that fourth element. Some panels go one way, some go the other.
Difference, because you still got the reason and the failure to show any reason for not accepting the reason.
Right. The better element, the better test, in a case where someone is terminated for policy violations is to take a look at other situations with policy violations to see whether or not there's any inconsistency on the way that the company handled those and whether they involve people outside the protected categories in question. That's far more relevant in a policy violation case than, say, in a reduction in force or other or the kind of employment situation. And here, the company terminated, for the same reason, three other sales representatives in the prior 2 years. None is Indian, and two of the three are under the age of 40. So in our view, he didn't meet his prima facie case either. Counsel argues that there was an abuse of discretion in denying Mr. Naik's motion to reconsider. It's an argument in his brief, but you know that's he just rehashed arguments that that were in the brief in opposition to the summary judgment motion or in his discovery motion to Judge Nolan. There was really nothing new presented in the motion to reconsider in terms of newly discovered evidence, change in the law. Everything that's argued there was or could have been argued on summary judgment. So if you, Your Honors, have no further question, we'd ask that the decisions of the district court be affirmed.
Thank you very much. Okay, how much time? 4 minutes.
Your Honor, I'd like to touch on initially what counsel spoke about pretext. And we believe we have shown pretext in this matter based upon the contradictory testimony and statements made in the affidavits of Brett Lunston.
Well, but I thought we just had a pretty cogent explanation of that.
Well,
that
Your Honor,
one is, you know, office visits and one equates to doctor's scene.
Your Honor, I'd like to speak on that as well. Mr. Lunston never bothered to speak to any of these doctors that Mr. Naik allegedly falsified these calls for. Now, they can sit here and say what they will about speaking to these doctors' offices, but above and beyond this, on summary judgment, they provided the names of 7 or 8 individuals who they allegedly had spoke to at these doctors' offices. These names were never provided to us upon initial discovery. There no contact information was ever given. We were taken by surprise as to these people that Mr. Lunson had allegedly spoken to. These are material fact witnesses. They were allegedly aides or secretaries at this office, not the doctors themselves. And as far as policy goes, none of these doctors have submitted any affidavits saying it's their policy or procedure to not see, to have two doctors in the same clinic not see a sales rep. Let's see here. Besides the change in the deposition testimony and his affidavit, the honesty of the belief of the defendants in what they're doing is an issue for the jury to decide, not for the trier, not for the judge. And as far as, I wanted to go back real briefly. As far as Mr. Age, the comments about Mr. Nike's age from Lunston, those started almost immediately after Mr. Nike joining Mr. Lunston's team. Furthermore, there was a postcard that Mr. Lunston submitted to Mr. Nike, which commented on his age as well during his birthday, something to that effect.
Could you explain that? What did you just say?
Mr. Lunston gave some sort of I believe it was a birthday card to Mr. Nike. It was a picture of
the cards have that
your
heart
old,
right.
Something to that effect.
Can't
which Mr. Nike
old.
Mr. Nike would not have, I don't think, have taken any offense to that if it hadn't been for the fact that Mr. Lunston had made so many comments about his age previously. And finally, I wanted
not about his age, but about his experience.
Experience, age, correct. I agree, but I don't think that the two are separate necessarily.
Why? You could be 15 and have had 30 years of experience. I mean, you could be 45 and have had 30 years of experience.
That's absolutely true. That would still put you within the protected category of individuals, though. I would say also that as far as the average calls per day reports go, he says we were asking for the entire district as though it's a large amount. It was 12 people.
No, he said region.
That's 12 people. The region, actually, the Schaumburg, it's the Rockford District and the Schaumburg Territory. The Rockford District is what we asked for. That encompasses 12 sales reps. Their average calls per day reports for 12 sales reps. We did not think that that was unduly burdensome or overly broad, based upon the fact that Mr. Lundson had testified that that was what he was looking at when he determined that Mr. Knight's calls per day led him to further investigate. Anything further, Your Honor?
Thank you both so very much, and the case will, as all the cases, be taken under advisement.